Hey, sweetie.
I'll pull it to you.
Oh, no.
You know, that's what it is. It's basketball. It's not a soft sport.
I'm going to be a man, and if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. This man just gave me a job. I'm not signing that shit.
There's a lot I got to say, but I ain't going to do it here because it's free to hear. I ain't going to curse.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. Unfortunately, it's just myself today, Joseph Corr from Stats Perform Media. Andrew Canyon and Body, other guests can't be on the show, which is unfortunate. Bit of a conflicting schedule. But Andrew will be back in the near future. In fact, we might even do an episode. In fact, we will do an episode before the NBL Cup commences, whenever that does commence. We're set to commence on the 20th of February. I'm recording this on Tuesday the 16th, so we'll see what happens there. But we might revisit our top four and the major talking points going into that cup. Andrew and I, remains to be seen. Lot of stuff on today's program. We're talking news and views, decals, Ryan Brokoff, and then we're going through all the games that have been. We can't really talk about the games coming up. I don't think the schedule's been released for the NBL Cup yet. But before we go any further, some clerical matters. First of all, if you're listening for the first time, or perhaps a long-time listener, please do rate, review, and subscribe to the show if you haven't already. If you subscribe, that means you automatically get the next episode when it comes out. There's no thought process involved. Item number two, Marvelous by Body Nodge. I still have 7 copies left. Mint condition, signed by Brett Maher. Great read for any fan. There's a lot of NBL books that have come out over the last little bit. You've got Lindsay Gaze's book, Gaze, the Man, the Player, the Coach, the Myth. That one by Grantley Bernard is very good. Also, Paul Shirley is a guest, or was a guest, on the podcast. He has a book out called Ball Boy. I have my copy. Get yours as well. That'd be a good one. Item number three. We'd love your support here. Patreon, the link is in the description. If you like the show, you can support it for a fiver a month. You get some free articles. You get a few other fun things popping up and about. But that's there. And if you do become a Patreon, thanks in advance. And a big thank you to the current Patreons as well. There's a little pocket of you, pardon the pun, and I greatly appreciate you being on board. Fourth and final piece of clerical work before we get going, Booktopia. If you're in the link to buy a book, any book, use the link in the description. It helps the show. We get a certain percentage, small percentage. And typically the books are cheaper than on Amazon. And also the company is Australian-based. So if you're worried about timeframes, Amazon's normally pretty good, mind you. But Australian-based, ships out of Sydney, normally a wee bit quicker. Could be fun. Let's jump into NBL talk. News and views. First things, the decals. Okay, we know it. They're bad. A lot of Lighthouse Sports Management, the head of that, Daniel Moldovan, came out on Twitter, fired some shots at the Players Union and said, you know, when's the Players Union going to look after players seriously? And the question is, what do the players and their union do about this issue? I think the only thing they really can do is strike. You know, if they're that bad, refuse to take the floor and tear them up. Imagine that the teams across from you are from the Philippines and then just do what you want and just go on their home floor and tear up the decals. Either one. I will say a lot of people's workplaces are difficult and dangerous. You know, what are the nuts and bolts processes? What are you willing to lay on the line to see their removal? Obviously, there's a sponsorship dollar attached to the decals. If they come up, that money's gone. Are players willing and teams willing to take less? To ensure their safety? Yeah, that's an individual question. And then, you know, to like sort of Andrew Boger to tweet about this issue, and going back on that, I don't think Jarrell Martin actually slipped on the decal. Players have. One slip is too many, and I don't think Martin slipped on the decal, but it didn't look good either way. But going back to Boger, I mean, Boger, if you're serious about this, you know, and you want to change everything, just pay the difference. You know, make up the sponsorship dollar. I don't know how much it is, but, you know, if you're earnest, it's like if someone said, oh, I want to end world hunger. Okay, we'll go and put some food in someone's gob. Oh, no, I'd rather just, you know, get on the socials about it. I don't know if that's the most effective way, but I guess it's something. Moving on. Ryan Brokhoff signs with South East Melbourne. Are they the best team in the league now? Are they in the top three? You would think that either Glidden or Turangi goes to the bench. I'm probably going to say it's Turangi. And they're running with Sykes, Glidden, Brokhoff, Ben Moore, Mitch Creek, Wetzel, depending what combination they go with there. They become pretty good. I tipped them to finish fourth at the beginning of the season, and that prediction obviously gets a bit of a shot in the arm with this signing. But I will say this. Have the Perth Wildcats lost their pull, especially with locals? I think that the Wildcats, unlike other clubs, the Wildcats don't tout themselves as sort of an NBA simp or a stepping stone club for locals. That's a win now club. And so does it appeal to Brokhoff? He has strong connections to Frankston and Simon Mitchell, so that's probably a huge part of it. I don't doubt it. And he wants to live in Melbourne, so that's probably a bigger part of it than the team. But just, you know, when this signing happened, a lot of people were like, well, why aren't the Wildcats in these conversations? And I think that's a fair question, but I don't have an answer. The other funny thing about this Brokhoff deal is this was leaked and sort of gossip mongers came out with this one. And I don't know. I've never understood breaking stories and things, especially if you're not in the media, because I wouldn't do anything if I didn't get money in my pocket for it. A lot of people seem content with a pat on the head from the higher ups in the basketball community. That doesn't blow my skirt up, but some people seem content with that. It's a fair play. My last thing is, who moves to the bench? I think it might be Glidden. We'll see. Turangi I like defensively, but are they going to tell? It's easier to tell someone in their 20s they're going to the bench than someone like Cam Glidden going to the bench. I think Glidden's paid more, so that makes it a bit more of a difficult conversation to tell him. So I think it'll be Turangi. Third thing, who knew that all the NBL needed was a global pandemic to improve its stock with local talent? The NBL is a zombie apocalypse away from being the best league in the world. Kay, you know, you at home, you're smart people. You tell me if the juice has been worth the squeeze. We lost Nick Kay, Sean Long, Mello Trimble, DJ Newble, Tarico White, Jay Sean Tate, Brandon Ashley. We've only really gained in return, Landau, Brokhoff, Cotton Kane back. I guess you could throw Bogut in the lost campaign due to the COVID pandemic. Question four in news and views, and the last one is, can NBL players back up? I am mystified by these seesawing blowouts where we had Perth beat South East Melbourne by a big tally, then get beat up. We had Brisbane get beat up, then come back against Adelaide. You know, and maybe that there's a professionalism here where that mental and physical ability to stay locked in and gunning for each game just doesn't seem to be there. Maybe it's COVID. Maybe it's playing the same team over and over. Maybe it's just league parity. I don't know. But it's got me thinking. That's it. That segment's obviously normally a lot better with someone like Andrew here, but we must press on. First game of last round, Melbourne at Illawarra. Melbourne taking this one 91-88. Got a couple of dot points here. Why was this game so close? I think Melbourne are a more talented side, even with the players they had out. I mean, Justin Simon had a stinker. Survey and Simon says no. Went 2 of 11 from the field. His athleticism was kind of matched by Uday Barber at times, and maybe even surpassed by Uday Barber. It seemed to trouble him. Tyler Harvey and Jessup were great. No complaints there. Hobson. Andrew Canyon and I, we flagged this when Golding went down. Is he a Ewing theory candidate? Well, they're 1-0. And Hobson, 21 points, 50% from the floor. Had plenty of turnovers, but shot well. Landau had fouls in this one. He really had it taken to him by Froling and Ogilvy. They just put foul pressure on him, and he didn't have the statistical game we'd expect from Landau, but they still won. Fair play. Perth at South East Melbourne. Kevin White. This is the game they won. Perth smashed him 75-106. Kevin White had quite the game. And I wish Kevin White had the same commitment to taking and making threes as he does to underhandedly smacking around imports. He'd be very successful if he had that dual commitment. John Mooney, this guy's a South East Melbourne nightmare. Doesn't give up on a play, and he's really like Bryce Cotton in that sense that he doesn't take a single second of a playoff. He's really good. Perth holds Southeast to 27 points, 38% field goal percentage in the first half. How did the Perth Wildcats lose Damian Martin and yet improve their defense? Have they improved their defense? Maybe I'm overstretching it. Another question I had. How long does the Luke Travers starting experiment continue? He brings balance, but little else. And I think I'd prefer to see him come up against second units rather than starters. I think he hasn't started any game particularly well and needs to get his wheels spinning before he get into games before he seems to really give any major production. He's got talent. He does a few things that I like, but never from the jump ball. Mitch Creek took a team-high 18 field goal attempts, but that was kind of deceptive because he had 8 offensive rebounds, of which time he shot it directly afterwards. So he really only got 10 field goal attempts, practically half, and he had to go and get him himself. I don't think he's a big enough part of the offense, but that's just me. Later on, it kind of flip-flopped, but still, something to keep an eye on out there. Serious question, though. Who's the owner of the league's best defense? Is it Perth or is it Melbourne? Have a sit. Have a think and get back to me. Also with South East Melbourne, we talked about before how there's been so many seesawing blowouts. Who would have thought that a team depending on Cam Glidden and Ruben Turangi would be so up and down game to game? I'm not surprised. New Zealand Breakers at Sydney. End score in this one, Sydney 84, New Zealand 74. This is probably the most unattractive game of basketball I've ever seen. Neither team looked like they could score. Neither team looked like they really wanted to. Moller fell out of the starting lineup in this one. They went with Jordan Hunter and Jarrell Martin, the more natural starting five. 8 players went through the game for the Kings in under 5 minutes of the first quarter. It's a lot of players. I've got written here, unwatchable. This was like a hostage for those in attendance. I thought someone was going to come out with a bullhorn and try and talk the Kings out of relinquishing their fans unharmed. Ty Webster went 4 of 6. Lamar Patterson 1 of 8. Casper was timely with his scoring. Didn't shoot a great percentage, but kind of came up with buckets where it mattered. Didn't happen in the next one, but I said it before. Was this the worst game of basketball you've ever watched? It was certainly the worst game of basketball I've ever seen. And I've got here, Martin, still not a fluid part of the offense. He had 14 field goal attempts, which was second to Casper Ware, which just shouldn't be the case. Jarrell Martin should be in the low 20s of field goal attempts, and they should be really going to him. And Casper Ware seems only too happy to shoot it over the top of him, along with some other Sydney Kings. Importantly in this one, Sydney, free throws. They went 25 of 28. The Breakers went 9 of 17. And as a result, lost. Next game, Adelaide at Brisbane. The end score, Brisbane 70, Adelaide 85. I think it's pretty clear at this point, as Vic Law goes, so go the Brisbane Bullets. Well, he went 4 of 14. Brisbane had been creamed in the fourth. And to that point, to this point, this game, Brisbane had lost 5 of their 6 last quarters, one of which was against Melbourne where they were right in the game and then got blown out. And this game was no exception. And I was going to ask this question of Andrew, Harry Froling, are we putting a line through him as a player? 20 minutes, 1 of 8, got toweled up by DJ and Humph. I'm not going to do it just yet, but gee, the pen's pretty close to the paper. Illawarra at Sydney. Sydney losing this one 82-85. That's the next game, pardon me. We're talking about this before. Martin didn't slip on the decal. But more the point, Sydney can't score. They're boring. They are a boring offensive team to watch. It's like a watermelon seed between someone's thumb and forefinger just squeezed, and eventually it'll pop out for sort of freakish score that comes off of some scrappy play. They're really unattractive. Didi wasn't particularly good in this game. He's come back from injury, went sort of 1 of 5, 1 of 6, didn't block out late and gave up a critical offensive rebound. The big question coming out of this game is, why was DJ Vasiljevic not in the game in the fourth? He looked very upset on the bench and then was very vocal on Twitter talking to Corey Webster about the decals and just looked like he had some pent-up aggression to get out. And so he should have. He should have been in the game. And it's clear that Adam Ford favours the defence over offence. That's why Didi was out there. And I think, I wonder if he'd call that a mistake. I would. I wonder if he'd think the same. And I think this whole defence over offence is a sort of a hangover from the cynical Will Weaver era. Very defensive minded, didn't play with a lot of individual brilliance, a lot of fantasy. And as a result, two very unattractive games, one after the other. One a loss, one a very, very lucky win. I think this is the one where Casper Ware dribbled it off his foot late. Again, this was an issue of Casper Ware forced to do too much. Jarrell Martin was off the floor having hurt himself and was double-teamed and turned it over. Not a good look. Bryce Cotton did the same thing just the other day against Southeast Melbourne at some point. One thing I will say is the Sydney Kings, their coaching staff, they like to wear the suits, the three-piece suits, kind of like Reservoir Dogs. I guess that makes Adam Ford Mr. Purple. I don't know who Mr. Pink is, but I certainly know that the Kings' offense is Mr. Pooh Brown. Moving on, Perth at Southeast Melbourne. Groundhog Day, as Nick Tam would call it. Perth 71, Southeast Melbourne 96. Sykes Creek Wetzel. I was talking about this before. Sykes Creek Wetzel combined for 53 points on 22 of 30 shooting. That's something like 70%. You shoot like that, you're going to win it. And my question I had was, what happened? Are Perth worse than we thought? Are Southeast Melbourne better than we thought? Honestly, my answer is I actually think Southeast Melbourne are quite good. As I said, I had them finishing fourth, which is no easy feat in this season or any season. And they got 18 points out of Turungi. I mean, how often is that going to happen? So when you get 18 high-quality points out of him, you would expect this team to win because they're a walking 80 points, and then with him or Glidden giving you some production, you bump up to 100 and Perth just can't score that much. So they got absolutely beat up. Absolutely beat up. Not a good look for them at all, and I think Perth are probably asking themselves a lot of questions. Now, moving on. Last game of the round, Brisbane at Adelaide. The two crisscrossed the country to play each other. Brisbane smacking them by almost 20 points, 74-93. And what the fuck was this game? Sorry for the language. This was terrible. Pindad was out there for minutes. They were just the most sort of high-calorie, low-carb minutes. Didn't see a lot out of those. Having said that, I'm not surprised. I mean, this is the team I thought Adelaide would be more often. But they're 5-4. I don't know how they've got a winning record. I really don't. They've just won some games. Humphreys has been better than expected. He's been really, really good. Just quietly, Keanu Pinder, spoke about him before. He's the only 36er. He's the only 36er big off the bench. I've been trying to notice how Connor Henry staggers DJ and Humphreys, but I sometimes get distracted watching the game and I don't bother, but I'll be doing it from now on. The reason why I didn't watch how he staggers those minutes because I couldn't watch this game out of fear I was going to go blind. It's like staring at a solar eclipse. It was dangerous, this one. That was all the games from the round. Hope you enjoyed that. NBL Cup coming up. I wish I had more to talk about with that, but I don't want to commit to anything because who knows what's going to happen. Coming up, though, one thing I do want to end on. I want to talk about this. This was an article. It's about Bogut buying into the Kings, and this one was put out by Andrew Webster of the Sydney Morning Herald. Really interesting article. You can catch it on my Twitter, and I really recommend you read it. Give the Sydney Morning Herald your click, your business, your eyeball. Play into their algorithm so they can eke out a little bit more cash in this cruel, cruel economy for sports media. Questions I had from the article. Number one, why Webster over Matt Logue? My impression is that maybe Sydney's most notable basketball writer in Matt Logue is on the outer with the Kings. That's why he's not getting the puff pieces. I think Andrew Webster has had two Kings-centric pieces. Obviously, he writes for the Sydney Morning Herald. He's going to be in contact with the Kings. But two pieces. One was the Casper Ware finals hubbub. I've got my own sort of queries about that one. I'm going to leave that to aside. But he got that one. And then most recently, this Bogut one. Typically, that would be something that Matt Logue would sort of have an exclusive on. Didn't happen. And I think here's why. February 14 of last year, Matt Logue wrote an article entitled How Larry Kesselman Saved the Kings, Bogut in Politics. Now, I read this at the time, and now it's behind a paywall, so I can't go back and read it. But I think that article has Paul Smith tiffed. Paul Smith tiffed. Say that five times fast. Because then, you know, that piece came out on February 14. Just sort of 2 weeks later or thereabouts, on the 5th of March 2020, Andrew Webster writes the story about Paul Smith, and I think the article was called Paul Smith Opens Up About ADHD, and it, where obviously Webster had followed him to the game, and Smith was sort of very sort of mugging with the medication, and oh, I've got these things, like, oh, you want to talk about that, and wrote about it. It was a nice little puff piece about how much he's done for Sydney and the Kings and blah, blah, blah. It was sort of an answer to the Kesselman article without being in conversation with one another. And then since then, Matt Logue, who I quite like as a writer, has sort of fallen out with the Kings and Smith and Bogut. And maybe I'm wrong about that. DMs are open. Phone number's there. You can give me a call. No one will. That's fine. That's why I found this one interesting. And you can go back and Google everything I've said and see if you come to the same conclusion that I have. But going back to this article specifically, the one question I had was, why would Larry Kesselman want to own this league? I wonder what joy he'd get from this league. It's a tough gig. You know, it doesn't get huge, you know, it's not a huge gravitas. It's not like owning an English Premier League team where it's incredibly posh and sophisticated. You know, it's a working class sport in this country, and the league is on the way up, but it's still an expensive hobby. The fans are an odd breed, bless your hearts. You're quite clicky, protective. You're not exactly the sort of life is grand, let the good times roll type of people. And then, you know, the people he works for, you know, the people he feeds bite the hand that feed them quite often. You know, any sporting league in Australia is always, you know, Australians are by nature very negative people. So that rolls into it. So I don't know how he does it. So I really applaud Larry Kay for taking the time to do it. Another thing from this article was Bogut. Muzzled, he says. I just get the impression that Kesselman wants Bogut to air his grievances in person, or in person and in private, rather than bearing his soul on Twitter immediately after he thinks something, you know. You know, immediately getting on the Twitter like a broken-hearted teenage girl. And I don't think that's an unfair request from Kesselman, if that's the only request he's making, but you know, when you're in management, that's what it is. But why would you want to own the Sydney Kings? They don't make any money, you know. If you're a businessman, you want to operate with your head, not your heart. And taking on a sports franchise in Australia in the middle of COVID. I mean, if you like spending money writing checks, you're in the right business. Last thing. This is sort of an extrapolated point, but I want to make it. The phrase, tell it like it is. And I think Andrew Webster describes Bogut as someone who tells it like it is. I don't know if he describes him as someone who it is, or that's a quote from Bogut, or maybe even both. I really resent that saying, you know, I tell it like it is, for a couple of reasons. One, typically when people say they tell it like it is, they're really just telling it how they think it is or how they want it to be. But they very seldom are actually telling you how it is. They're giving you an impression. But it has that ingrained ego to say, I'm telling it like it is this way, when, you know, more often than not, it's not. But the other reason I don't like this saying is this, it shows me that people that use it don't know, haven't researched the use of the word, what it is. It's like when people misuse a saying. Like I heard someone say, instead of someone saying from the get-go, they said from the gecko. And they thought the saying meant something like, oh, when you get a gift that you're a bit skeptical about the person giving it to you. I was like, no, it's from the get-go. It means a quick start, but they had heard from the get-go. So, you know, these things take on new life, and tell it like it is certainly one of them, because tell it like it is a civil rights term. There's a song called Tell It Like It Is by Aaron Neville, which is basically, as I understand that song, is about a man of color sort of singing to his partner saying, like, why aren't we a real couple? Tell me like it is. Is it because I'm African-American or underclass or not, you know, not the same class? So like a Jesse's Girl type situation. So when people say they tell it like it is, unless they're talking about American civil rights, the saying doesn't really have its place. And could be, you could even throw around the cultural misappropriation label, but that's probably a bit far. Anyway, that's all I've got on that. Slow moving pod always is when I'm by myself. A reminder, rate and review if you like the show, subscribe, why not? It's one of the few NBL podcasts still running these days. And I'll get Andrew back, most definitely, and we're going to talk the cup, we're going to talk about our preseason predictions and how they've changed. We might do a new top four, maybe a new top six, and maybe even, you know, a new, give out some sort of pre-NBL Cup awards, NBL first team, second team, MVP, defensive player of the year, so on and so forth. Guys and girls out there, if you like the show, join Patreon. I put up articles up there. Doing this new thing called One True Sentence Sports, where I just give one sentence on every game. It's a fun exercise, and if you're at home and you like writing, do it yourself. Basically, open a Twitter account is what it is. Everyone will let you go, so you can go on to something far more important. Enjoy your day. Good day and good luck.